You know, music is a hard thing to cancel. That's the sentiment from writer Jody Rosen.
You know, music is kind of there even when you don't summon it. If you're walking the streets, you know, it comes at you out of an open car window. If you walk into a store or a restaurant, there's often music playing.
Rosen recently explored this idea for the LA Times after the re-release this year of expanded digital versions of the Jackson albums. Michael turned out to be the trailblazer, as we know, and to this day, almost every genre of music and dance has been influenced by his contribution. But as we also know, before and after his death in 2009, Jackson was also accused of child sexual abuse. He was never convicted of a crime. So the question Jody Rosen takes on is whether we can separate Michael Jackson from the Jacksons, and do we really want to? Jody joins us now. Welcome.
Thanks, Tanya.
Well, as you've written, you say listening to music in general is sort of a calculation of moral math. But in this piece, you explore this question, if MJ is canceled, can we still enjoy the Jacksons? But first, the big question, is Michael Jackson even canceled? And I want to make a note to say you don't like that term, cancel, but rather holding people accountable.
So in terms of Michael Jackson's, you know, cultural status, you know, he is in this unique sort of gray area these days, I'd say. There was, of course, these charges of child sexual abuse that dogged him during the last decades of his life, and these charges resurfaced dramatically in the 2019 documentary Leaving Neverland, in which we heard from two of Jackson's alleged victims who, to my mind, you know, offered quite compelling testimony about their abuse at Jackson's hands. So on the one hand, that's very disturbing for a lot of people, for a lot of listeners, a lot of people who felt strongly about him personally as a guy. But we need to note that Michael Jackson had his day in court while he was alive. He was found not guilty in a trial involving a different alleged victim. So that makes his status slightly different than someone, for instance, like R. Kelly, who is a musical artist who, for one thing, is still alive, is still with us. So for that reason, I think Michael Jackson's status is a little uncertain. And the question is what we do with those feelings about his personal behavior and this incredible body of work that he's left behind now that he's no longer with us.
Well, do you think the resurgence of the Jacksons' music brought by these newly released editions is actually going to prompt a reckoning?
I think this is the kind of a complicated issue that we're going to be dealing with on and off for the foreseeable future, because Michael Jackson's music was so popular and great and ubiquitous, and record companies are not going to be shy about continuing to push that product out because there's money
to
be made.
They make lots of money on it.
And they make lots of money. There's a Michael Jackson musical planned for Broadway. So that will be another, I think, signal moment in this process where people are going to be, you know, asking themselves, what do we do with this music and with all the questions that are kind of swirling around Michael Jackson's legacy?
Well, the Jackson story is certainly an American story. A father with a slew of talented kids pulls the family up from poverty and turns them into one of the biggest acts of all time. But in this piece you write, you talk about these dark, troublesome themes in some of the Jacksons' most popular music from the 80s, that little bit of time you're talking about when they were this group, the Jacksons. This Place Hotel is one of those songs, which also features his brothers. Let's listen. Jody, was this a precursor to what we would later hear about Michael? What did this music reveal?
In terms of the lyrical content, that is, it's kind of a crazy song. It's about a guy who goes with his girlfriend to a hotel, somehow magically in this, or maybe not magically, in this kind of horror movie way, there are ex-girlfriends of his in the hotel room. So the idea is that this guy has been set up, his girlfriend leaves him. It's sort of a preposterous B-movie plot, I don't know what you'd call it, but what I think you hear in there is you hear themes of paranoia, specifically sexual paranoia, that would surface in later songs, some of Jackson's most famous songs, for instance, Billie Jean. I mean, you can trace this clean through his discography as a solo artist. And so I think that's what's one of the things that makes the re-release, from a historical point of view at least, extremely interesting. It's a chance to kind of trace these themes. And he's a person whose personal demons were right there in the music.
How would you factor in the other members of the Jackson family and how they play into all of this as we think about revisiting this music and how we should interpret it?
Listening to this music again, I mean, you know, I hesitate to kind of confirm these cliches that it was just kind of Michael and his brothers were a backing band, but that's really where I came down. They were guys who could sing and dance, play instruments, but they were not Michael Jackson. You know, Jackson was not just clearly the star of the group, but he was just this, you know, supernatural talent. And that was a source of great tensions within the group over the years, and especially during the kind of later period. After the 1979, when Jackson released his solo album, Off the Wall, he suddenly wasn't just little Michael Jackson, the lead singer of the Jacksons or the Jackson 5. He was this bona fide superstar. So by 1984, when the Jacksons were putting out an album called Victory and they went out on a tour, Michael Jackson was the star of the Victory tour, and the Jackson brothers themselves were very much an afterthought, and, you know, they were traveling separately to gigs. Eventually, it sort of broke the group up. So that's definitely something you hear listening back to these.
There is something almost redemptive that happens to the complicated legacy of famous people when they die. And we see this with Michael Jackson's legacy. It's why you wanted to write about it. I'm wondering how you're personally viewing it.
It's, you know, as I say, it's complicated. I personally, when I listen to music, when I experience art, I feel like one has to make a separation between the artist and the art to a certain extent, because where do you begin to draw the line? I mean, like, you know, there's so many great artists who led complicated lives, who led morally compromised lives. What we have left after those people pass is the art itself. And one of the things, as I say, that makes Jackson's music so interesting is the fact that you can get the whole messy picture of Michael Jackson, the man and the artist, in the music itself. So I can't claim to take some indignant stand and not listen to Michael Jackson's music. I don't want to deny myself the pleasure of his music, because that pleasure remains acute despite uncomfortable things about his personal behavior.
Here's another question. Is the onus of deciding the morality of who we listen to with a clean conscience on the listeners? Doesn't the music industry have an obligation to?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you can't count on the music industry to be moral arbiters of almost anything. It's an exploitative history, exploitative both towards audiences and artists. So for that reason, one would think that if Michael Jackson was credibly accused of this stuff, his record company has some responsibility to say something, make some statement. But, you know, back to your original question about the cancellation of music. A, is it even possible? B, is it something that we want? I mean, you know, the art is going to be around no matter what any record company does. I mean, it's not even, you know, technologically possible to wipe Michael Jackson's music off the face of the earth. I think the music business's responsibility is maybe to clean its own house up, maybe so that there is less bad behavior within the music industry. So, yeah, I think that it's not even realistic to ask that, you know, the music industry ban this or that artist. It comes down to a decision that the individual listener or consumer of music has to make him or herself.
Jody Rosen is a contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine, and we will link you to his piece in the LA Times at hereandnow.org. Jody, thank you so much for this conversation.
Thanks so much.